Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we do a build review of the Oppenheimer PC, a $50,000 creator build. Is it the bomb, or will it fizzle out? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain.
Dennis, as you know, one of the disadvantages of being a hardware PC guy is all your friends want you to fix their computer, talk to them about builds, whatever.
Yeah, I don't do that.
But one of the more interesting parts of it is frequently people send me interesting builds and ask me what I think of them.
Ooh.
So I got this link to this video, Dennis.
Oh, no, not a YouTube video.
Yeah, it's a YouTuber, but this one I think you might find interesting.
Okay.
This guy, Tech Notice.
Tech Notice, nice.
And you can track him down, or we'll link to him. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Builds what he calls the world's most powerful creator PC. And in big, beautiful letters, he says that it's a $50,000 PC enthusiast build.
Oh, no. Oh, and he named it
the Oppenheimer, because Barbie isn't, powerful enough.
Well, a Barbie PC would actually be more clickbaity. I don't know why they're talking about it.
There you go, pink. So he's got to lean into the Oppenheimer, because why not? Because Oppenheimer is about power and danger and, well, go see the movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought we should take a look at this thing, and I want to caveat again. He calls this a creator PC.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a slightly different target audience than an enthusiast, but there's a lot of overlap there.
There is. And, if I'm going to throw in a little bit of history here, back in the day, there were PCs and then there were workstations. The lines kind of got blurred there for a while, and now we have creator PCs and we have PCs. So, with the idea that the creator PC is really the new workstation. But the difference was, back in the day, the workstation was a different class of hardware. You used a different processor, you used different video cards, you used different everything.
Oh, and that's where those crazy NVIDIA cards came from that everybody got excited about, right?
The Quattro.
Quattro, yeah. Not a gaming card.
Yeah, and now we have, general compute cards and stuff like that. So the idea is that we have this. We still have the notion of the workstation, but because it's using actual PC components, because manufacturers are getting really fickle with, we don't want to make another one for this, we have creator versions that anybody can buy. The creator class hardware normally comes with stuff that's not necessarily geared towards gaming, but more towards storage and multi-GPU, where, as we talked about in the previous episode, we don't have really multi-GPU for gaming anymore, but it's still viable in the workstation creator space.
So, and we should define creator, because in this case, at least, a creator is a content creator. So these are the kind of folks that are generating 3D imagery. They're handling large amounts of video, that type of thing. So their machine needs to be able to chunk a lot of data in an efficient manner. And in a way, this is kind of an obsolete build, because if you are a creator, it's very likely that you farm out most of that computing power either to a render farm or to an external machine that's centralized, that's designed for that. So you're not wasting your machine to do all this powerful computing, and you can continue to create content.
Well, and obviously it depends on your environment. So we have the professionals that are doing this stuff. That's where we're going to have those render farms. We're going to have huge networks for storage. We're going to have this super fast interconnected network of PCs and workstations and stuff. But if you're just like a one and two shop that's doing, trying to change the world, creating a new next generation Pixar movie.
Yeah.
You might need something like this.
Yeah, I know some really cool content providers that are out on the YouTube doing their thing solo. But that being said, you get the target audience. It's not a gamer. It's not your average consumer. And that drives the cost up. But let's look at some of the components and see what you think.
Yeah. So really what's interesting about this, because the video is, 58 minutes long? I'm not going to watch the whole thing.
Okay.
I got about 10 minutes in and I'm like, no. I got a little queasy. And then figured, hey, Darren sent me this for a reason, and I think it's not to watch the whole thing.
Well, and you make a good point, because back in the day, and he even uses the hashtag Ultimate PC, but we've talked about this even, I think, before, now that I think about it. Maximum PC, which was an amazing, amazing enthusiast magazine.
Oh, magazine, hard copy.
So we reference this a lot, and now it's kind of merged and become PC Gamer, for better or for worse, which we quote a lot. They used to put out every year their dream build, and it was usually right around the Christmas shopping season, and they would do a cost-as-no-object build, and sometimes they would get ridiculous, and this reminds me a lot of that. But because I'm not a content creator, I think you might have to fact-check me on a few of these decisions, and the motherboard might be the first place to start.
Okay, so motherboard. Conveniently, our video producer here put down the build.
Yeah, with affiliate links. So if you purchase these things, he gets a little cut.
Yeah,
and
I like affiliate links. That's how you get money.
And we like content creators to get paid. So if it sounds interesting, go watch the video. Tell him we sent you.
Or tell him he's dumb. We'll see how it goes at the end of the video.
All right, so Asus Pro WS.
Workstation.
The WRX 80E, it makes me think of Subarus. 8XE, Sage SE, Wi-Fi 2, AMD, WRX 800, Ryzen Threadripper Pro Extended ATX Workstation Motherboard.
That's a mouthful.
Won't even fit on a fortune cookie.
No.
But that is a mouthful, but it's a big monster workstation motherboard.
Yeah, well, there is one thing in the title that would really kind of make that distinction for you, and that's the Ryzen Threadripper.
Oh, yeah.
The Threadripper.
And the Threadripper. The Threadripper is making a comeback in the workstation space.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have lots of threads. It's ripping threads.
And scalable, which is great for content creators. Mm-hmm. You can offload to a lot of different processors. But you pay the price, my friend, and that is probably a very expensive motherboard as well. But it makes me want to choose an Apex motherboard, for example, but I feel like that's because I'm coming at it
from a gaming standpoint.
So let's continue.
Well,
not a terrible choice so far.
No, and I've reviewed several Threadripper processors, and I found that the Threadripper concept is pretty great. It's awesome. You get this monster CPU, lots of power, not very good for gaming, but it has a multitude of threads and actual real cores that you can spawn off processes to. And that is where, you know, if you're doing 3D modeling or CAD or video editing, you can offset a lot of the time sitting waiting to these processors to help get this stuff done and make it a lot faster for you. Now, the processor that he picked for this particular motherboard is the AMD Ryzen Threadripper Pro 5995WX 64 core, 128 thread desktop processor.
Now, I'm going to be the first to admit that I'm not a huge fan or follower of the Threadripper, but my guess is that's probably the top dog.
Yeah, that one, yeah, that's a good one.
So you're throwing a lot of money at this processor with that creator intent in mind, that you want to use those 64 core, 128 threads to get you the maximum amount of computing processing.
Now, the Threadrippers that I reviewed were third generation. So I think they had 24 cores, and now we can get 24 core Intel desktop CPUs, which is kind of amazing. This one, 64 cores, fifth generation. So it's going to be using the latest Ryzen technology. So it's going to be a lot faster. The problem I had with the third generation Threadripper is that per core performance was pretty bad when compared to some of the Intel ones that you could get at that time. So you could go with an Intel processor with half the amount of threads, it'd still be faster than the Threadripper, but it wouldn't have a lot of the extra cores that you can go and spawn processes up to. So it depends on what you're doing.
Well, I do like this as a choice so far, although it's hard for me to swallow the cost of a Threadripper.
Yeah.
Ah, content creators. All right, let's move on.
They're they're demanding. All right, we have memory. Now, this is one thing where in the description, he linked to some Team Group T-Create Classic 10L DDR4.
And if you watch the video, this is what he actually uses in his build. He uses a total of eight of these, right? So four kits.
Yeah, which is, it's a 64 gig kit, 2x32 megahertz or 3200 megahertz, which is slow for even DDR4, but he's using 8 sticks, so that's what, 256 gigabytes?
That's a lot of memory. And when we priced these, I think we found that these were around, even in his video, $121.
A kit, yeah.
And drop. And so there's not a lot of money to drop here. It's an interesting choice for me with RAM, and I feel like some of it was aesthetic because he makes it fairly clear that he was looking for a black and white motif.
Oh, yeah.
And these are that pretty white silver, not the RAM I would have chosen for a couple of reasons. One is I think you can get better, faster RAM elsewhere, and two, because I know that I would have chosen something with lighting if you're going to spend that kind of money.
Oh, yeah. Well, and with DDR4, I mean, obviously, it's been around forever, and you can get lots faster memory. And one thing that I ran into when testing the Threadripper boards is that they are somewhat finicky in how fast the RAM is, much like Intel's claims that, hey, you need to run this speed memory, or otherwise we're not going to warranty the processor because it overextends the memory controller and some other BS that they try to get us enthusiasts to pay more money for more processors. I think that might be what he's running into here, but still, I mean, 3200 megahertz, that's pretty slow. And it's DDR4, but then again,
but you're limited by the Threadripper. And these are classic modules, which also kind of chips at me. So I wonder, from my perspective, if they overclock, but obviously if you're a content creator, you're looking for stability. So,
right.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, and some of it is that it is already pretty extreme. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we're taking a gaming mentality to it, it's like, well, why do you need all that stuff? And well, you haven't spawned 12 processes and well, you're doing a 3D render and stuff. So anyhow.
All right. So we got a lot of RAM from Team Group.
I think we have storage next.
Yeah, so now this is another baffling choice for me, and he explains it fairly well in the video, because he has purchased a handful of Team Group T-Force Cardea Zero Z440 1TB SSD drives. Mm. Now, these are enterprise level, if you can even say that about NVMe drives.
Uh-huh.
Now, these are Gen 4s at least, so they're pretty quick M.2 drives. Mm-hmm. But the read-write on them, 4,400 megabytes per second. So not the fastest ones out there. So his choice to me was a little baffling. One of the few things that I really had to look at the video for, and he chose it because of their warranty and their enterprise-level read-write guarantee.
Yeah, so he was talking about something 1TB rewrite for every day for 5 years or something.
Yeah.
Which, that's enterprise class SSDs. And if you don't understand what enterprise class versus desktop class, desktop SSDs are generally designed to be fast. And desktop users will normally replace their storage devices every time they upgrade their computer. So
right.
2 to 3 years, maybe 5 years. And that's assuming that you're writing to your drive all the time, which none of us are. I mean, we're at our computers maybe 12 hours a day if you're really dedicated. But even then, you might be playing a game. You're only accessing the drive to save stuff or to load a new map. You're not doing a lot of activity. And what's important is the writes, not necessarily the reads. So if we have the drive full of games and we're just pulling the games up, that's not adding to any wear and tear on the drive. It's only when we're writing stuff. And for content creators, we are creating images and videos and streaming stuff. So when we're, like, for instance, I'm doing a YouTube video and I'm going to render it out, I'm writing out 5 gigabytes of data to my SSD and then realize, oh, I screwed up the outro. So now I have to go and delete that and then redo it. And that's why these writes are really important, and why a drive that has enterprise class writability is important. The thing that I have a problem with is that this is a 1TB drive. You can get 2 and 4TB drives for more storage, use less drives. And the speed is only 5,000 write and 4,400 read.
Well, interestingly, in the main show this week, this month, if you're catching up with us online, we talk quite a bit about how your storage is still likely the slowest part of your component. Mm-hmm. And especially in a build like this, this is true. I gotta believe, Dennis, that even a content creator, especially if you're making a living at this and want to buy a $50,000 machine, that you're gonna be upgrading your system before 5 years is up. So I just don't see why you wouldn't get a faster set.
Yeah, like getting 2 terabyte drives that are twice this speed, which you can get, and then just replacing them as needed or adding more.
Well, and in the video he's using, the motherboard comes with a breakout card. So the motherboard has 3 on boards, and then I think the card supports 4 more, so 7 of these bad boys, mm-hmm. which is a lot. But to me, it felt like it was a decision to justify using that card upgrade slot as opposed to a decision that made sense to me from a performance standpoint.
Yeah. Now, I will admit that I glossed over that area of the video. I did see the breakout board. And I have one of those breakout boards in, I think it's an MSI Threadripper board. It allows you to put 4 drives in there. It's got dedicated cooling. Some of those cards allow you to RAID those drives together. So instead of having 1 terabyte drive by 4, you can have a 4 terabyte RAID 0, for instance, which is what we used to do when back in the day.
Well, that makes sense because you get then more performance than the 5,000 4,400 mm-hmm. because of the RAID. You also get the safety of if one of these things goes bad.
Yeah, if you do like a RAID 0, then, or not a RAID 0, but a RAID 1 or something like that. Yeah,
then you can replace one of the drives and be okay. So that makes a little more sense to me. But still, as a content creator, I'm looking, if I have to render this on machine, reducing my downtime, I see these as a little more disposable. Bigger, faster now.
Yeah, especially have a fast drive for booting, and then you need your working drive, and that's what that breakout card would be for. Here's a bit of trivia, though. That breakout card supports 4 M.2 drives. Do you know why?
It's an even number for the SATA... lanes.
That's a good guess, really. It's not right, though.
Oh.
The PCI Express slot, 16 lanes of PCI Express bandwidth. Those get divided by halves. So you can divide 16 into 8. That's how we got SLI across 2 cards. And then you can divide it again, and each one has 4, which then SLI didn't support it, and they had to do crazy little switches and multipliers and stuff like that. An M.2 NVMe SSD requires 4 lanes of bandwidth per drive. So by having this breakout card, you can have 4 drives on there because the card breaks the PCI Express lanes into 4.
Oh, man, I was so close. I think that one counts.
That one does. I'll give that one to you.
All right. So, okay, I understand the decisions. This one is probably the first one where I largely disagree. I guess the RAM, sort of. Okay. Yeah.
Now, he has 2 cases listed, and I'm going to say that he probably tried to build in one and then realized that he was an idiot and had to go into a different one. But he's using Fantex cases, which are, we like those.
Fantex cases. They breathe well. They're pretty affordable.
And this one's similar to the one you have. It's the Fantex Intho Pro 2 full tower.
Yeah, in fact, I did a review of an Intho case, and I really liked it. It breathes well, looks nice, price was good. Pretty standard layout, mm-hmm. which is kind of why I start to wonder why he chose it, because cases have trended larger for better airflow. Mm-hmm. And in a creator case, we need to keep all of these expensive components cool.
Yep.
So I think I would have chosen a case that is known for its airflow, maybe a Cooler Master, something like that, or a better Fantex that's a more open, larger design.
Now, he might have chosen this based off of something else in the build that we haven't got to yet. I would agree, though. This case that he has listed here, that's a very, very poor choice. I mean, it's not very big, and you're running a Threadripper in this thing. That motherboard is probably $800. I haven't checked it. Memory is going to be another $500. You're getting all of that going into a case that costs $170.
Yeah, there are a lot better cases out there for not a lot more money. You put another $100 into your budget there, and it's going to give you just an incredible amount more airflow, mm-hmm. and more options for your build.
Yeah. Well, he has another case listed. Let's all right. Check this out.
So that is just the Elite. So it's basically the upgraded version of the Intho, yeah. Maybe the top dog, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. The now, Fantex Intho Elite Extreme, this is the case that comes in its own dedicated shipping container. Ooh. If I remember correctly, it's huge. It's very expensive because it comes with a ton of accessories that allow you to modify the schnot out of it.
Okay, so now I'm starting to understand, because what he's likely trying to do is find ways to mount all of this extra hardware into the case.
Yeah.
Now, that's a tall, narrow case. Mm-hmm. Breathes a little bit better. Not a very common case, though. So
yeah, not the one that I would have picked, because airflow. I mean, we have a solid front panel, which means that the air is coming in from the side. It's a bit restrictive.
Ooh, it's pretty, though, and it's all aluminum. That's a nice plus. But I feel like, again, maybe he's a big fan of the Fantex cases, and I am too, but not for a server-style build.
Yeah. Well, check out the price.
Oh, yeah. He went for the big money there.
Yeah. So, like I said, and I didn't mention the price on the show, but the Intho Elite was one that I saw at Computex 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and they showed me the shipping container it comes in. It's actually one you have to pick up with a forklift, because it comes with all this other stuff and padding. The price of it has it listed at $934. It's an easy grand.
And that may be a price-based decision, unfortunately. Also, I feel like that's kind of a unicorn. They're going to be pretty hard to come by, and you're going to pay a premium price for them.
All right, so the next thing on the list is the CPU cooler.
Now, this is, I think, a huge, huge decision on a Threadripper, because we all know they're large, they run very hot, and you're going to be super dependent on the performance, so you don't want that thing to throttle.
No. So what cooler does he pick? Dun, dun, dun. The Noctua NHU14S TR4 SP3. It's just a cooler I've reviewed, by the way. I'll try to put a link in the show notes below.
Sure, and we love Noctua products because they're efficient and they're quiet. But
An air cooler.
Yeah, which is odd, because we know that he's going to need a lot of cooling in this case anyway, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. But why, I guess, is what I want to come from. It's not what I would say is an extreme cooler. It is a phenomenal cooler for a standard or even an enthusiast build. Mm-hmm. But you're going to be messing with a ton of heat. I don't know where the TDW is on that, but it's going to be a lot. You want to maximize your cooling, reduce your noise if you're going to have this thing in a room that you're working in.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about the Noctua cooler is that it is silent for the most part in terms of an air cooler. I found that when I was testing on the third generation Threadripper with this particular cooler, it was just average. It wasn't keeping the thing chill. It was keeping it cool so it would operate. And it operated quite well for many hours that I ran it at full load. But it would definitely benefit from a secondary fan. And probably a fan that's not a Noctua fan. Now, if you're running your Threadripper as a desktop or occasional workstation, perfect.
Oh, yeah. This is a workhorse. I mean, it's like the 212, right? It's going to be in a million builds because it's quiet, it's pretty, and it does the job for most users.
Yeah. And I want to say I saw a shot of the guy's build, and he swapped out some much thicker fans, like some 35 millimeter fans, and replaced them on this cooler. So obviously he picked an air cooler for a reason, and maybe that's later in the build.
Yeah.
Oh, he did have an option for an Intermax 360. Two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this makes a little more sense. I mean, obviously here we would say if you're going to get that extreme a build, then you probably need to be building a custom cooling loop, especially if you're spending that much money. But I understand that a lot of people are not comfortable with building their own loops, even with, pre-built components.
Yeah. Well, so, and that might play out a little bit later. So let's see. Next on the list we have, GPU.
All right. Now this is where things get a little bit interesting, because he initially talks about doing the build with three 4090 cards.
Oh, yeah. Well, he has several options here. So he has some Tough 4090s, which are ASUS brand, mm-hmm. and he has two of those. And I want to say these are probably the air-cooled cards. Let's take a look. Yeah, these are the air-cooled cards. So on a Threadripper board, even though you have all these expansion slots, you have to deal with the space between the cooler and give them ample room. Plus, leave room for your SSD expansion card thingy.
Right. So what he ended up going with, though, is the three-pack that you see listed down there.
Yeah, this is the MSI Liquid. So he's doing some liquid cooling. Where's that guy? Here it is.
There you go. So, hey, we love MSI Gaming Series cards, and the GeForce 4090 here is a beautiful, out-of-box, water-cooled OC graphics card. The 4090 Supreme Liquid comes built into it. So the nice plus here is you get your water cooling built in, so you don't have to mess with the custom loop. Again, kind of a mystery, but it's based on your comfort level, and I guess you don't want to have leaks if you don't know what you're doing on something that you're making a living on.
Now, one thing I would like to call out is that this particular cooler is not the one that he shows in his pictures. I think he had a different card, but maybe this is the only one he found for his affiliate links. But what we have here, with most of the MSI all-in-one graphic card coolers, you have a fan to cool the VRM on the card itself.
Right.
And then you have your AIO, which spawns off to, in this case, a 240 or a dual 120 radiator. So now you have three fans, and he's using three of these cards. So that's nine fans, you know, simple math, right? That's a lot of fans, a lot of noise. And he has his Noctua cooler for the CPU.
Well, you know, you got to cut some noise somewhere.
Yep.
And I want to point out that this goes right back to case choice again, because he's talking about three radiators if you go this solution, which isn't really going to work in a standard case, even a large one like that Pro. Yep. So you should probably be looking at a cube case where you have a lot more area for mounting your radiators. And again, to me, it just doesn't make sense to not go with a custom loop there.
And again, I didn't watch the whole video, so you can shun us in the comments or whatever, but there might be a possibility where he went with two of them with an AIO, and then the third one just has standard air cooling, which might explain why all of these are listed here. He has a lot of links for his affiliates.
There you go. Go make him a dime. Buy something.
Yeah.
Now, you should point out, though, that he does offer the big money solution here, and this is where he gets most of that 50K, ironically.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's suggesting that you could get not one, not two, not three even, I think, but four.
Let's see. Three. He's going three.
Three. Well, he stayed with three because of the motherboard.
Yep.
But of the incredible NVIDIA RTX 6000 Ada Generations graphic cards, which again is a commercial card.
Yeah,
this enterprise is, card, if you will, I guess. Yeah. I should say.
This is the RTX edition of the Quattro from back in the day. So this is going to be your totally uncut Ada Lovelace GPU, which is even more powerful than the 4090 on a workstation class graphics card. These are the cards and the chips that are used in like the Grace all-in-one data center boards,
right?
The ones that are powering AI all over the world. It's the same kind of chip.
So can you spend $40,000 on video cards? He says yes, but I'm seeing that that would actually be $30,000. So a little padding there. Maybe he's trying to water cool those aftermarket as well.
Good question. But yeah, they have them listed here at, what is it, B&H?
Yeah.
B&H sells video cards. Cool. $10,000 each.
All right. So we saved you $10,000 already if you wanted to do this build.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget to tip.
Power supply. We have a 1600 watt, a single 1600 watt power supply. He lists one that is platinum rated, 80 plus platinum, and he has one that is titanium rated.
Okay. So these are probably the top Seasonic. They're the Prime Edition, which tends to be their big dog. So they're a little more expensive, but you're getting stable rails, tons and tons of power, and that energy rating, which is almost kind of silly in a build this big, but that's what you get with the big money in a power supply. So saving a little power right there will bring your overall cost of ownership down.
Yeah.
Good deal.
So now that we've gone through the whole build, though, I still think it's a bit overkill, and it's probably, again, one of those maximum PC, hey, we're going to put together the maximum we can fit into any particular case within a budget just to give us that shock value, right? So obviously, the way I see it, you don't necessarily need to have three graphics cards. You could probably get by with two.
Right. Okay?
And then you don't need to have all of those NVMe drives. You can use that separate card instead of doing 7 or 8 1-terabyte drives. You could go with 2-terabyte drives, go two across that expansion card. So that'll give you 8 terabytes of working space. That's where your renders are going to go all onto that card.
And that gives you that RAID option as well, all on a single slot.
Mm-hmm. And then you just need to have a 1-terabyte drive for all of your software and your OS. And that's your primary drive that's going to be mounted on the board.
But heck, you could even go a 2, 3, or 4 there, really, if you're going to spend this kind of money.
Well, exactly. But the point is, you don't need to have 3 drives on the board unless you're going excessive, because you're not going to use that space. You're going to use your working space, and that's going to be your 8 terabytes that we just put on that card. That's where all your renders are going to go, because they're only going to stay there until it's rendered. Once you're done, you're going to put it onto a network where it can be backed up and used by other people. That's the proper workflow.
Well, the good news is, if you check out his links, he's replaced nearly every fan with a higher performance fan. He looks like a lot of fan techs there, a lot of options there. And to give the guy credit, this is what he seems to do for a living on his page, is he does PC builds. I like that he does actually do the builds live, but it's a pretty long video.
Mm-hmm.
You've been warned. But he does have a lot of builds out there in his system. This is, I think, a little clickbaity. Maybe a lot clickbaity.
A lot clickbaity. And it's to get people like us that know a little bit about these particular builds to kind of react to them. And I had fun doing this. This is actually kind of cool. It's not how I would work. And, you know, he contrasts this with, you know, what you could buy from Apple. And, you know, Apple doesn't even go to this level. So obviously he's trying to one up Apple and try to make it a little bit cheaper, but it's Apple. They can do whatever they want, and you're just going to buy it, and your corporation's going to pay for it and consume all that cost anyway. So it doesn't really matter from that standpoint. From what he built here, though, completely overkill. I kind of like it, but I also think that, you know, if you're going to be putting together a system like this for a workstation creator situation, be smart about it. Don't be overkill about it. And, you know, instead of using an air cooler, which Noctua is great, I would say, hey, this is a perfect choice for this particular build. But if you're going to go 2 cards, instead of spending all that time trying to figure out where your radiators are going to go for your all-in-one video cards, do like a full loop, like what EK is offering for these render farms. Put a couple of big radiators in your case, loop the entire thing, so that way you're cooling your CPU, your 2 GPUs, all into the single radiator. You can control the noise, the heat, and overall, it will be a nice looking build instead of something that you just shoved into a case you picked up off the shelf.
And I gotta be honest, it wasn't really as bad as I thought it was gonna be. So would I build this PC? No, but do I see that it would at least do the job as advertised? Yes.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2023. Thanks for listening.